Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 2 of From the Arsenal. This is Chris, your host. Tonight we are absent our illustrious shop owner co-host slash drunk person Todd. we have Mike, who's just yelling at the mic like he doesn't care. Addison, Lane, and Brian, how's everybody doing?
Hey.
Not too bad.
Nice intro, Lane. Cool. Hey.
You guys are very enthusiastic.
I don't know what you want from me.
Well, I'm doing great. It took me 29 minutes to log on here, but I'm doing great.
Better late than never, man.
I don't know about that.
Mike and I had a draft at the shop today. We drove into the snow and managed to get some games in today. I won because I'm awesome. I'm not going to save it for last like Todd did, like try to hog all the glory. I just straight up won in your face. I didn't play Mike, but I would have beat him too.
You're not wrong.
For sure.
Well,
absolutely.
Well, I will say this. Out of an 8-person draft, for some reason, I don't know how, but 4 of us decided to draft Runeblade. I don't know why. I don't know how that happened.
I'm fine with it, though.
Well, yeah, of course you are. I decided to go Runeblade because I never played it before. So I was like, you know what? I'll draft it and try it. And then
so you didn't even read. No signals. Just that's it.
Yeah.
That's what they do, man. That's how you go 4 of one specific class, because people don't read the cards that are getting past them. It's like, yeah, this generic is good.
It started out fine because it was going left, and as I was getting past a bunch of Runeblade stuff, so I was like, oh, this seems good. Then it got past right, and I was like, oh, I'm not seeing no Runeblade cards, because everyone to my left of me was playing Runeblade as well. So,
yeah, I don't know if you guys all started on it or what the deal was, but I know at one point, like, multiple people had to pivot or started hate drafting because Zach Benz came for his first draft, and he pulled a Grasp.
Yeah, so his second pack, Zach was sitting left to me. So his second pack, he pulled a Grasp. So he just, I was like, well, I'll switch to Runeblade. And I was like, well, I guess I'm not getting any more Runeblade cards from him. So it's all right. I was 2-1.
Yeah, it can be very difficult to read signals in Flash and Flood as well. I don't know if we want to talk about that at all, but there's some of the pitch values are actually significantly better for certain cards than they are for other cards. And if you're just like picking the card up because you think it's good and not, you know, factoring in what that pitch value of that card is, like, you're going to get screwed every time.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. Like, 100% agree. I will say
this. I got to take all the good cards because I was only Ranger. So just everything, be quiet. Just give it to me.
I will say this, and this will be the end of my rant. But why are half the Runeblade cards, like all class-specific cards, for the most part, block for 3? Why do all the Runeblade cards block for 2? Like, what's up with that?
Because your armor values are probably better.
Well, they're bad. Armor values are bad.
I don't know. It was rough.
I don't know. Rangers suffer from the same problem. Yeah, the arrows block for 3, but everything else blocks for 2.
But all you're playing is arrows.
I definitely thought that Runeblade was the least powerful class in draft. So I don't know. I definitely, like, if 4 people are drafting it, I'm not sure what cards you guys are really drafting. So
I had exactly 30 cards in my deck.
You had 3 cards?
Yeah, one of the Runeblade players had to go get some cracked baubles to finish his deck out.
Oh, that's painful.
I imagine so, 4 people.
Anyway, I digress. It was fun. I'll never do it again. I mean, I'll never draft Runeblade again, but it was fun.
Hey, you could join the club with Lane.
Yep.
Well, so we had our little 8-person thing. No big deal. It was cool because I won. That's the only reason I wanted to mention it, because I'm selfish and I want glory. But there was a huge tournament over the weekend. I don't even know how many people were in it. Between doing 2 podcasts and all my other junk and driving through the snow and stuff, I didn't get a chance to watch this weekend, but we had the calling. Let's pick one person who knows the most about the calling that wants to describe the event for people.
Not it.
I can certainly talk about it a little bit.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So, the Auckland calling, was this weekend. It was a Blitz format, And there were a couple rules updates right prior to this calling that did have probably some impact on the event. We don't really fully know how much yet. It was live streamed. Not all of us got to watch that whole event, so we're not really sure what full impact that had yet. But we'll see as we get deck lists and do some evaluations there, what may have, you know, changed as a result of those. So let's talk about those rule updates. Iron Song response, the play rule has changed to the very common do as much as you can ruling. So essentially you can play the card if reprise cannot be triggered.
That's pretty big.
It's pretty big.
That's a pretty big deal, yeah.
Yeah, it makes it a lot easier to get that Iron Song response out of your arsenal if you had it stuck there, or if, you know, you just need to get it out of your hand because you can't use it in the matchup. There was another one as well, the end of match procedure trial. So there was a draw rule change where the active player completes the turn and the game is a draw if no winner has been determined. Now, Addison, I know you watched a lot of this event, and that Blitz games often, you know, go very late. So talk to me a little bit about how you think that might have impacted this event based on what you saw.
Based on what I saw, it didn't impact it at all. There were some games that went down to fatigue, but the ones that I saw that went the latest still had 4 to 3 minutes left. So... yeah, I don't know that it had a huge impact at all. We're talking about players that have had the game for, you know, since release in Auckland, in New Zealand, so they've had quite a lot of time to get reps in. And also talking about some of the best players here, so nobody played, you know, a deck that I saw that was going to fatigue, other than some Guardian, and the Guardian players that I saw were playing pretty efficiently. So.
Hold on to this because I want to have a full conversation about this because I have major beef with this, but I don't want to
interrupt
on calling. So
sure,
let's keep going with the rules and circle back to this one.
Sure, we can. That's fine.
So there was one additional rule change, which was the concession rule change, where any concession will drop you from the tournament, and asking for a concession is also an automatic drop. Now the thing is that this rule change is never actually going to exist in an event because it's just not something that you can measure in any way. You guys agree with that, right? You don't have any... there's not a whole lot to say about this.
Yeah, I mean, you just go ahead and swing at me.
Yeah, I'm not going to block. You know, if you get to a top eight match and you don't have, or if you want to, or if you concede a game to your opponent kind of thing, it's oh, we got to play the game. All right, well, we'll play. And all right, go ahead and swing. Yeah, I'm not going to, I'll pitch zero to block. I'm not going to block. I'll just take it. My turn. All right, I pass my turn and put one in arsenal and draw. I mean, it's,
I mean, if a judge is watching you do that, technically you should get a, you know, warning for it.
Oh, agree. I agree.
They thought that you were trying to. I don't know how heavily this will be enforced. I assume this is for this rule is in place for people who are just trying to just draw in to their friends, or, you know, concede to their friends so that their friends can make top eight.
That's right.
And just not play the games out.
Yep. But if they're conceding to their friend to make top eight, that's usually in the last one or two rounds anyway, right? So a drop would only impact the players who are already locked for top eight.
Exactly.
Which would then, you know, we'll see how that plays out, but there's going to be feel bads like in a lot of events if that actually is an enforced policy, I think.
Do you guys have an issue with that, though? If somebody, I mean, either way, only one person's getting in, right? So do you care who it is? Like, that doesn't really bother me that much.
I mean, not necessarily.
Here's the thing, like, this is what I see. Like, I've played in tournaments where I was undefeated and the person that I've played against was had one loss. We get to the last round and we're just like, you know, it doesn't matter whoever wins. It doesn't matter because we're both going to get to the top eight. So I concede just so that we don't have to play the game. We can take a break. And the reason that comes into effect, yes, we both made top eight, but maybe the person that lost to the guy I conceded to, or the people that I beat it, the people I beat, maybe it affects their strength of schedule. So they missed top eight by by a point, some point, you know what I'm saying? By a strength of schedule or something like that. So that's where I can see where it could actually mean something if someone concedes, especially if the people that are playing both get to top eight no matter who wins. So that's why one just concedes to the other so they can take a break or something. And so it just forces that last game to actually be played out to affect the strength of schedules for others that are still trying to get to the top eight. Exactly. If that makes any sense.
It does make sense. It also does not impact ID rules, by the way. So so you can still intentionally draw, is my understanding of this ruling. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. Right now I'm mostly glossing over it as a legislative change, but no real functional change.
I've been at Destiny tournaments, got to the top match, and I was like, all right, well, I don't need to play this. You don't need to play this. If we both, you know, whoever wins, we both make top eight. So I concede, you win, whatever. Let's go get a hot dog while we wait till we go to play our top eight match.
I personally played many events where I've been locked for a top cut in, first after Swiss, and then I've conceded to somebody in the last round because I can't, you know, drop past like second or third in the rankings, and then like concede to my friend and get him in a top cut. Like,
right.
This is designed to prevent that. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yep.
Yep. All right. So moving on from that, we did have 147 players at this event based on the numbers that I saw from the end of Swiss rankings. It looked like there were about 147 players. It's possible there were, 150. I'm not sure how accurate that list was at that point because what I saw was round 11 standings. The notable things, top six players were Ira, and then it was Kano and Dorinthia in the top cut. That's how they finished first through eighth. Now, do you guys think that maybe there was some Kano underperformance here?
Well, the last one was what? It was the top six were Kano. It was top eight, six of them were Kano of the last one. Top four were Kano.
Yep.
All right. So maybe some underperformance of Kano. I will say from my experience with Kano, I've had tournaments where I've gone in with Kano and just, I hit my opt cards properly. I hit my triggers. I hit my all my combos and were able to blow out my opponents. And then I also had tournaments where I triggered Kano and I came up one short. I just didn't get that one damage I needed. So, it's doesn't feel as consistent as Ira does. Can Kano beat Ira? Absolutely. But I just think Ira is more consistent and consistency wins tournaments. So
I think this was just a good old fashioned adjustment by the Ira players. I think that Ira still is the best deck in Blitz, and I don't think that there's really that much of a question about it. It lost the last tournament because the Kano player showed up and had adjusted for Ira, and I think that the reverse happened here, and the Ira players showed up and adjusted and pulled it out. Another thing to note is that this was an 11 round tournament, and it's probably harder to play Kano for 11 rounds than it is to play Ira for 11 rounds. So.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly.
Yes, you're going to be mentally fatigued by the time you get finished playing as a Kano. I can definitely concede that. Where Ira is a real consistent, the deck pretty much plays itself if you know how to stack things correctly to get as much wide damage as you can through.
What was the adjustment that these players made after the last event?
I haven't seen the deck list yet. I have no idea. My assumption is more blues and just swinging with the Kadachi every turn. And if I was going to play, if it was me and I was losing to blowout turns to Kano, what I would do is I would cut some of my reds, add more blues, and then I would just swing with my Kadachis and then wait until I had an opening to where I could swing with either Command and Conquer or Lightning Strike. Other than that, I would probably just play a larger amount of blues, and that's what I would
do. Yeah, I've seen some Ira deck, like the last tournament where the Kanos were the top four, one of the top four decks were running the red Absorb and Aether. I mean, that card's in there strictly to blow up the Zephyr Needle, right? But other than that, like, I've seen the Ira deck because we have a player, local player in our area that played Ira, and he just, like Addison said, put some more Command and Conquerors in there and just went straight hard. And the Wizard deck, Kano players, doesn't have much option but to but to block, he can't take 11 turn one. You know, that's rough.
Yeah, like I think all I would do. I mean, I haven't seen his deck list, and I don't play Ira. I don't play Ninja at all. So let's get that clear right here. But for me, it would be I would prioritize blues. I would make sure I had all the null rune I could get, and I would run Command and Conquer and Lightning Strikes and Flying Kicks as my big haymakers, and that's all I would care about.
So I run Ira. I've won two tournaments up at TAG with that deck. I've also played Wizard as well. The Ira decks, you are right. Blue is pretty much, you don't worry about combos as much. You're trying to pitch blues to swing with Godachi. You've got Command and Conquerors and Lightning Strikes, Drones of Brutality. You can go with as a very strong deck in terms of a lot of damage cards and kind of hold back on a lot of the defensive reaction cards. Or you can, you know, put in those Flick Flacks and, you know, Springboard Somersaults and kind of play a little bit longer game to kind of, you know, even out everything. But when you're, you know, going in turn one, Command and Conquer turn two and Lightning Strike and you're swinging, you know, three times a turn, it's really going to fatigue somebody's hand, and usually they can't keep up with it because they're on their back leg. And as long as you don't run out of gas, which you most of the time do not, it's very, very hard for a player to bounce back from that. And if they do, they put themselves at risk even more. So it's an interesting deck. It's very fast, and it plays itself, in my opinion. It's really good.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have Flick Flax, though, because you got to have it for the mirror. Because I think that running the Flick Flax in the mirror is where your mirror breakers are at, right?
Absolutely.
If you play a Flick Flax on the second Godachi, I'm not going to want to play my Command and Conquer into that.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to think strongly about arsenaling and passing, because at that point my turn's pretty much over, because your combo cards are blocking for 5 and 6.
And that's what saved me from a mirror match. Ira player that was playing straight attacks, I was able to go to draw and win the tournament just because of the fact that I had, you know, the Fate for Scenes, the Sink Blows and things to stop his massive attacks and put us both at one. I mean, it's interesting how that works. Now I would have lost if it had gone full time, but because of that, it did save me.
Interesting.
So something I'm interested in is we've sort of seen these two characters in particular, right? We have Kano and we have Ira, and they're both, when they're adjusted properly, they're kind of taking over tournaments. So in a lot of other games, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but when cards start to kind of take over a meta like this, people start talking about potential nerfs. Do you guys think that Legend Story is going to just stick to their guns and say, listen, this is just the way it is until they hit those 10 wins, they become Living Legend, then they're gone? Do you think they're going to maybe address some of this stuff with some directed nerfs at some of these cards? Or, you know, how do we deal with this? Do we just have to play through it, or are they going to help balance it?
So, it's a good question. It is a good question.
Yeah, I don't think – y'all go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and I think that we – honestly just don't have enough information to really answer that right now. We do know that the Blitz format can have restricted cards, so they can limit you to one of each pitch of any unique card. It's possible that you know, they make that adjustment to the format, but I think right now, you know, two major events in the last 2 months, not a super diverse top eight, but very clearly, like, there are different decks here that are topping. You had Kano, Ira, and Dorinthia in both of those events making top eight. So I don't know.
I would expect nothing to happen, honestly. I would expect them to not even mention it. They're going to wait until Monarch comes out and let that adjust the meta. And I'm sure that they believe that it will. Yeah, and as far as Ira goes, you'll just have to wait till she wins 10. I don't think she'll go.
Yeah, anymore. I mean, I agree with Addison. Nothing's going to change. I mean, we probably wouldn't be talking about – who knows how many events never took place because of the whole pandemic. You know, if we had all these – if all these events were going on worldwide, you know, and Ira was doing Ira things, then she would have hit her 10 and been retired. And then we wouldn't be talking about it. And then Kano would probably have been right behind her. So – maybe it's a good thing that didn't happen, because then we give them Monarch drops. Maybe it'll balance out, and there'll be some cool stuff in Monarch that'll bring everyone else up to speed, or enter some new classes. And then the Paper Rock Scissor format starts popping up, where Ira's really good, but yet this other deck just crushes Ira. So, you know, we'll see where that happens. But I agree with that. So I don't think nothing's going to happen until Monarch hits and we start seeing some tournaments with Monarch out there.
And I also think it's good that we have this right now because we're getting a lot of new players in there, and you don't want people building decks around cards they think are going to be potential to be used, and all of a sudden, you know, now they're no good. That's going to put a sour, you know, taste in anybody's mouth and wonder if they're going to continue with this card game.
Right. When I talk about these kinds of things, I always go immediately back to Destiny because droids were such a powerful thing for so long, and they tried these little mini nerfs to it, and that deck continued to remain strong past the point the game was killed officially. Like, they were still strong until the continuing committee just flat out banned every interaction between those cards. So beyond what you think they might do, do you guys like when a developer is a little more heavy-handed and comes in with the balance adjustments? Would you rather just ride it out and let them be done and get their 10 wins and be gone?
Don't know. We haven't seen it.
Yeah, let's hope that they don't do what FFG did in terms of like actually balancing a game, because they the FFG studio is not a competitive gameplay studio as much as they pretend to be. Their organized play isn't really designed for that. If we look at other card games, they're completely mixed. Some are super heavy-handed and will ban a card like before it ever gets released. They don't care at all.
Magic does
it. Yeah, Magic does it. Yu-Gi-Oh does it. Vanguard. It happens all around the industry. So I don't know. We'll see what they do. They haven't done anything yet. So I think we'll have to wait about 2 years to really see what their policy actually turns out to be.
I agree. The card pool will have to be bigger. But, I mean, to answer the question, I actually like it when they kind of hold back a little bit. Like, I don't want to see – I would rather, like, beat my head against the wall over and over again to try to find a solution and hope one is there. I mean, and eventually, if it's not there, obviously you need to do something. But I would rather exhaust everything that we can and go through everything that we can.
Well, you're also a filthy droid player, so that worked out for you last time.
True, I am a filthy droid player. I do love that.
I agree with Addison. Like, I'd rather beat my head against the wall, because then I take some pride in the fact that, you know what, I didn't play that deck and I was able to figure out how to beat it. But deep down inside, it's like I wish that deck never popped up. But it is kind of nice to be able to figure it out. But like I said, if we can't figure it out, you know, the 10 win rule is in place and they'll just be retired. So it's not like it's going to last forever.
And not just that, if you do build a deck just to stop that one deck, how as effective is it going to be for the rest of the tournament? You know, of course, you're playing towards meta, so if you're playing 10 Ira decks and you're the only, you know, player that's playing those Ira decks and you can beat them, then yeah, it's great. But, you know, you get a mixed field and you might be hindering yourself more than helping yourself.
Exactly.
We kind of saw that, right? We kind of saw that because the OTK Viscerai deck absolutely destroys Ira, but it auto loses to Kano. And when I say auto loses, I mean it literally loses. Like, you just don't win. So you do have you can beat Ira. Like, you can play a deck that beats Ira a fair amount of the time. You just got to make concessions other places. And when you're talking about playing an 11-round tournament, you can't really make that choice if you want to be competitive.
Right. You got to make sure your deck can make the top eight. Sure, if you get top eight, will you see a lot of Ira? Yeah. But you got to make sure that your deck can survive the lower tiers to get there.
Like I said, I wanted to roll back to the draw rule briefly because I want to use this platform to complain about it. That's stupid and I hate it.
Hold on. Before you move on. Let's officially congratulate Jacob Pearson for winning the calling.
Congratulations. I don't know that guy. I'm not congratulating him.
Congratulations,
hey,
Jacob.
We don't know him.
Hey, he still won.
They're very nice, I'm sure. And he won. So I don't know him. I don't expect anything from him. I'm saying congratulations.
Where's my congratulations?
Yeah. No, wait, when I win one? That way, when I win one, he can say congratulations.
Yeah, let's.
He'd be like, I don't know that guy.
Yeah, let's congratulate Jacob and, of course, the other content creators, notable names that did place well in this event. Matt Rogers finished first in Swiss, and we believe, based on the results that we saw, that he finished eighth in the total event as well. Callum finished third, Kieran fifth, Carol. And Kale McCreath also both finished in the top 16. So great job, guys.
Nice job. Very nice.
I mean, that's cool. But anyway, as I was saying,
Yeah, now you can rant.
Yeah, he wants to rant.
This draw rule is stupid. First of all, it was already a stupid crap fest because there were no tiebreakers, and he just went back and forth four turns until the game ended, which usually didn't result in anything meaningful. But, I mean, we played a construct event on Friday with just six people, not a big deal, and like four of the games went to draw.
Yeah,
this is going to be a problem. Like
it's not a problem if like everybody doesn't
control the speed of everybody else's game, right? So let's say you're at a tournament, right? You got a killer deck, you're feeling great. You come up against a new player who needs to read their cards. Like, you can't be a dick and say, listen, I'm going to need you to speed up your reading comprehension.
Oh, you absolutely can.
You absolutely can.
Should as well. You have to call a judge if your opponent is slow playing. That's competitive rule, like, number one.
Let's say you're a nice guy and not a dick, and you don't want to tell the guy to speed up his reading comprehension.
My point is,
especially in Blitz, Constructed's less of a problem, and I'm not sure how we had so many games go to a draw in Constructed, but based on the way that the system is put together, a draw in the first round is essentially a loss, and it crushes your entire tournament.
Yeah.
How can they justify this going forward? Like, it seems bad to me.
The draw rules crushes a specific deck type, and that specific deck type was one that, you know, Chris, you and Todd worked on building, and I got my hands on in that constructor tournament and realized, oh, this is actually really, really fun. And it crushes that play type where you just fatigue your opponent out and draws a game on as long as possible and then just hits hard at the end. So it's highly annoying. And like in Destiny, you know, how many times when you played against a mill player, how frustrating was that? You're going to mill me out and I lose that way. So that was extremely annoying. But
Yeah, but mill players had to play against the clock too.
Yeah,
they had to play against you and they had to play against the clock. So when they won,
right,
they were there's because they did a good job.
So the downside here is that, you know, as like Chris's Ranger fatigue deck that we're working on can fatigue out your opponent, but if your opponent plays slow, then it just the game gets to a point where I think Chris and we were playing one game in a Blitz format. Chris was playing his Ranger deck. His opponent was at one life, and you had like 23 life, and you lost the game. You know,
it was
like
33 to 7 at one point in Blitz,
and you lost the game because it went to time, and you didn't lose. It went to a draw. You know,
which is essentially a loss. It was the first round. So
exactly.
For me, there was no reason to play the rest of the tournament. Basically.
It feels real bad when your deck does everything it's supposed to do and your opponent has no answers but to just we're at time, sorry.
I mean, is there no place for control in this game? There's not a lot.
There definitely is. You have to play against the clock.
Let me tell you something. I don't want to sound harsh here because we're all new starting to play this game, but if you're playing at the speed you're supposed to be playing at, you're never going to go to time.
That's not true. It depends on your opponent.
Your opponent has to play it quickly as well. And not quickly. You don't have to play quickly. You can go in the tank and think about a turn. But, yes, if your opponent's reading every card, if you compare it against a brand-new person and they're at locals and they're reading every card, then you're just going to have to suck it up. I'm going to suck it up, and I'm going to draw and say, let me help you out. Anything above that, then I'm going to start calling a judge. But, like, if you're playing your deck, Chris, against somebody like against me, we're not going to time. One of us is going
to
win, I promise.
If we go to time, we're going outside.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
We will figure it out. No, but it wouldn't even come.
There's another question here. So we already know that time is becoming an issue. Is that strictly because of the fact that we're setting our time too low in the matches that we do play? What is the normal match time you see in big tournaments? Is it, you know, 50 minutes or is it 60 minutes?
That I'm not sure of.
I'm pretty sure it's 50 for Constructed, 30 for Blitz.
Time isn't even the most important issue here to me. The important issue is that there are no tiebreakers. I'm fine with it going to time, like contending against the clock, but to simply go to a draw is the real punishing thing here.
I agree. I've had a number of those.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
I do feel that, like Addison's absolutely right. You go to a big tournament, like a major tournament where people have practiced and play tested a lot. Nothing's going to go to time. People are going to play fast. But in the onset situation that does go to time, I do feel there should be a tiebreaker. That's just my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Like, I mean, if you think about the way that this game goes, one of the reasons I like this game so much is because the turns are inherently fast by themselves. Like, especially at the very beginning of the game, your deck is going to tell you what it wants to do based on the cards that you draw. Like, you're going to draw four cards, and you're going to look at your hand, and you're going to go, well, this is what I can do this turn. I can either block with these shitty cards that aren't going to do anything for me and then do something else, or I can hold this hand, take a bunch of damage, and try to do a big turn. There's really not a whole lot of the turns you're going to take the most time are the blocking turns when you're trying to figure out how much I can take, how much I can use my life as a resource, and what I'm going to do to swing back. Your offensive turn should absolutely take no time whatsoever. I mean, you should be pitching and just doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
So I don't know. I think that as everyone plays more and our locals and then in the United States in general and in Europe and everybody who hasn't had the game as long, the more we play, the more it speeds up. And I honestly believe that this becomes a non-issue.
I will agree with that. I mean, we did have a few games today, Chris, where we're just like, how much time is left in round? And we're like, 15 minutes. Holy, you know, wow. Okay. I thought, you know, we were closer to the end. But so as we get more used to the game and playing, we shouldn't see time come into an issue when you're at a major event. Now, when a local draft or, you know, learn to play or new players coming in, then yeah, time may become an issue. And that's just like as you just got to grin and bear, you know, get through it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can transition off of this. I feel a little bit better. Only a little bit, though, because nothing was resolved and this rule still exists. But, you know, maybe at some point they'll rethink it or make it a little better. But
That's a good point. This is a trial rule, technically. So they were going to do this as a trial for this calling, and then they're going to officially either make it a rule or not later on. So technically you can't get sad yet,
Chris. Yeah, but all the Kiwi posters are like, just play better. Just play better, dude. Yes, they are. Don't worry about it.
They are.
Just play harder, man. Like, whatever. Yeah, man. Get out of here.
Go.
That's why I don't want to congratulate anybody, because they all would tell me to play better. It's not my fault. But we got a little bit of Monarch news, which is cool. Like, we got to see the light opposing dark graphics came out. They told us it's going to be 307 cards. There's going to be four new classes in it. Well, maybe not new classes. We'll talk about those. Four of something. So I just kind of wanted you guys to talk about maybe some things you think might be coming with it. I know we're probably going to get some sort of new mechanic. Do we think it's going to be four new characters for existing classes? Are we going to get four new classes and the whole box is support for that? What do you guys think is coming in Monarch?
So, yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't like to speculate on that because of the fact that, you know, it sounds great. It's like, we don't know. It's a big box of chocolates and you don't know what you're going to get. The only thing that does interest me, though, is you now have six legendaries instead of five. So, you know, some of these, what is the sixth? Is it a new mechanic that everybody's talking about? Is that what's taking up the legendary slot? Who knows? I mean, that's very, very interesting. I do believe that we're going to see silver and gold tokens this time around, kind of like seeing what some of the stuff that was happening in Crucible. But I'm not making broad strokes about, oh, we're going to be seeing a Bard class or we're going to be seeing this, because, you know, honestly, I'm happy just to see a new set and new cards and, you know, just new things.
Let me correct you, though. You used to not like that. But now that you're on From the Arsenal, you love wild, unfounded speculation, and you want to tell me what you think is coming in Monarch. Go, Brian.
All right. Silver and gold tokens to map out the rest of the buying mechanics that you've already seen inside of Crucible. And
yes,
that's what I'm putting my money on. Get it?
There we go. Money.
All right.
Lane, what do you got?
Me? Oh, okay. So there are actually 18 tokens in this set, right? So if there are silver and gold tokens, that still leaves 16 different tokens. Like, that's a lot of tokens in a single set. So I think that we could potentially be seeing, like, a character that actually makes tokens.
Okay, I'm interested in that. Like, I was trying to mess with Kasai a little bit, and it's just, you know, it's not all there yet. So I want to see some of that stuff.
Yeah, I think it would be cool. Some character that you can actually, like, essentially... So, with weapons, right? Right now, weapons are the only, like, durable attacking card. But if there's another card that can stay through the turn and attack multiple times, I think that would be a very interesting addition to the game. I think it's something that we could see, given the fact that there's a significant number of tokens in the set.
That's a good point. I think I agree with you. I don't know if it'll be in this set. At some point, one of these heroes is going to be able to like summon a dog or something. That's going to be able to
Necromancer.
One. Necromancer. Oh, yeah, Necromancer can bring a zombie.
Zombies, skeletons.
That'll happen at some point. Yeah. Oh my god, you're like so excited down there. I'm so just like, zombies, skeletons, sure. Whatever.
So you want to see some sort of pet class? Is that about right?
I don't know that I want to see it. I think it'll be a missed opportunity for them if they don't do something like that. I think the great thing about this game is that there's so many possibilities for them. The only thing I care about seeing is that Brute gets better. That's all I care about. Anything else, it doesn't really matter to me.
What about you, Mike?
But I don't think that'll happen here.
There might be some good generics. There might be some good generic drops.
Yeah, I agree with Addison. Not Addison, sorry. I agree with Lane about the there's a lot of tokens, and I think there would be a missed opportunity for them to not to create a token, create a character that creates tokens. Necromancer, we know that's one of the classes they could bring out. And, I mean, zombies, skeleton tokens, that's very real thing that could happen.
I know.
The mechanic, I think...
Who's more dark side than a necromancer?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that's two things that for the game mechanic that I think they might be introducing is one of two things. We already seen some graveyard shenanigans, but I think that might be... I mean, we see the banished zone, you have your graveyard zone. I think that there's going to be more graveyard activity, possibly, but... The elephant in the room is the light versus dark. I mean, you got your angels, you got your demons. So, you know, maybe they just go full blown light classes, dark classes, and then they have generics that are neutral generics, light generics, and dark generics. And we've seen that mechanic in other games. It works very well, I think. I think that could be something they introduce.
And this is something you would talk to me about at the shop, Mike, but say they do introduce this light versus dark thing, right? It makes sense with the themes that they've shown us in the art and stuff like that. So this new set has generics that are neutral, some that are split between one side or the other. What does that do to already very strong generics like your Enlightened Strikes and your Command and Conquers?
I would hope that they just stay, those are your neutral generics. They don't try to change those. And that, you know, that may cause the value of a Lightning Strikes, Art of Wars, and Command and Conquerors to go up even more, because now they can be used in light decks and dark decks. But who knows? I would say leave them alone and then just, you know, keep on going with what you got going on. But, you know, I think that would be a cool mechanic to introduce that down. You know, these certain classes are dark side classes, certain classes are light side classes, and then you have generics that go in each one, and then you have generics that are neutral that you can use in any class.
So are we retroactively going to go back and put each hero in respective light or dark
they side? Could. I mean, saying you can like, look at some of the classes and be like, yeah, I can definitely tell that, you know.
Well, yeah, I can speculate on every class, I guess. I mean, I'm pretty positive that Dorinthia will be all on the light side. She's all like, you know.
And then you got things like maybe they have mechs that are evil. They have mechs that are good, you know. Who knows? So,
well, I don't know that they'll go back and assign a specific side to a hero. I think what they would be more likely to do is say, if you want to play with light side generics, you can't use dark side generics, right? You get to choose which side you're playing.
See, that
feel heavy, one is more damage heavy, something like
that. That makes even more sense. So Dash could be evil or good. It just depends on what generics you put in there.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's a cool, I like that a lot.
Like, that's a pretty big game-changing mechanic, right?
Then it is.
You get more variation between the type of deck you're going to see. Is it going wide? Is it going tall? Is it going fast?
Is it going evil? Now, is it going good?
Side or dark side? Like, yeah, exactly.
Are they going to force choke me, or are they going to put up shields? Who knows?
That also might be very interesting for like the merchant class. I know it's not very interesting right now, but what happens if the merchant class could use both dark and light cards because no deal is off the table?
Ooh, like yeah, that's a good. That makes merchant awesome.
Shapeshifter, same deal.
Yeah, boo. Don't talk about that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm just joking.
I didn't know I was supposed to talk about that. My bad.
I'm just joking. No, I mean, those are some. I think I want to say, me personally, is they'll have a graveyard mechanic pop up, but I can't deny the fact that they have light versus dark on all their pictures.
And I really think out of this set, we're going to get, I know they've talked about it completing the game, so to speak. I really think that it's simply just going to be four new classes. I don't think they're going to address other heroes for existing classses. Because the set is so big, it makes sense to me that they're doing it all now. These are all your cards, whereas the first eight got Crucible to fill them out. It's going to be a full set just for these characters with generics, of course, and flesh them out. And then over the course of the rest of the year, they'll start releasing more for all of the classes at once. But this one is just going to be these four.
I agree a lot with that.
We do know that, actually. The product sheet does say Monarch is a standalone booster set introducing four new heroes with all new mechanics. So we do know that there won't be any heroes that are...
Well,
I have never seen it. Where did you see that?
That could mean Blitz heroes for characters from Wrath that don't have them and Arc that don't have them. I'm saying we're going to get four new class archetypes with these guys.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're going to get four new class archetypes too. And then the only things that we'll be able to add to our old decks will be maybe some generics. That, hey, that's a cool generic. Let me add that to my deck.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and you see, the only thing that bothers me about that, I don't even want to say it bothers me because it doesn't bother me because it's pure speculation. But I want to make sure. I would love to make sure that, or I would like for it to be that, if that is the case, them to not invalidate all the old characters and have it be just these characters that are playable.
Yeah.
I want to still be able to play my
decks. And
I want to still be. I still want to be able to play Brute. I still want to be able to play Guardian. Like, I still want to be able to play the characters that got me into this.
Yeah, game. And that's where we hope that they do. You know, they play tested this game for how many years? So hopefully, we see that they introduce these four new heroes with these four new abilities or whatnot. But maybe instead of there being a power creep and now all these other eight classes are not playable anymore, maybe hopefully it just balances it out. Maybe we start seeing in Blitz matchups, maybe Ira and Kano don't take over because we got these four new that can kind of balance the sheet out. So like I said, you see the paper, rock, scissor matchups more and more. Maybe Brute steps up and gets better just because Brute's bad matchups now have bad matchups against these four new classes. So now Brute starts getting better because Brute's good against these, but still, you know, it could be a whole thing. Who knows?
Well, and I think that since they said that this is going to complete the game, I think it's been in the pipe long enough that they're going to be on par with the current heroes. I don't think they're wild with it. I trust them on that.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to be very naive and optimistic when it comes to that trust.
Yeah.
I think the thing, and if I'm not mistaken, the thing that they said completes the game, it specifically is related to the pitch system, right? Isn't that what I've read or heard? Is that something
I don't remember specifically what they said about it. I just remember that phrase, this completes the game.
Yeah. Me too. I just don't. I thought I heard something about it being specifically for the pitch system, but I'm not sure. I can't really remember.
And
if they were going to fix the pitch system or update it or add to it, I'm not sure. I have no idea what they would do. I can't even fathom.
So we had one other announcement regarding Monarch, and this is where Brian and Lane get to kind of take over and talk about some market stuff. But the Monarch announcement was that they are restricting sales of cases to brick and mortar retailers and some online retailers that are being grandfathered in. So I'm pretty curious to see how that affects the ecosystem. I think it's a good thing. I don't know, from your guys' perspective, as people who pay attention to how the market is fluctuating and all that stuff, whether or not that's a good thing for the game or not. So I don't know if one of you guys want to address that and then kind of go into how card prices are looking right now.
Yeah, so I guess I'll start out. I agree with this move. Right now, I think a lot of investors are really trying to jump into this game, you know, get massive amounts of, you know, cases of the first edition and hold on to them, hoping that they go up in price. So it keeps all the new product out of the hands of the players, and that extremely hurts the game and makes it a very, you know, hard entry for anybody that wants to get into it. But now you have the ability to hopefully, you know, get into brick and mortar stores and get that product. I mean, we've just realized that, you know, Todd now has the ability to possibly have a booster box draft where you purchase a booster box and make a Blitz deck. You may not have had that before because of the limited amount of cases that everybody would be getting because of the fact that you know, a lot of these newer retail online only stores are, you know, trying to grab them, and investors are trying to grab them. So I think that's going to help. It's going to keep the prices reasonable to begin with. And then we have Unlimited right behind it. So that's, I think that's all good things. It's great for the players. It's still going to be a little annoying for the investors that they're trying to do that. They're going to have to go through other means to piece together their products, but it should give availability out to you know, the people that need it the most, which is the people that play it. Brick and mortar stores, definitely, because they're the ones that are risking the most, allowing people to come in and play and, you know, keeping their stores open. I like it. It's a great move.
Yeah, full disclaimer here, I sell product online, and I do own a business that is impacted by this decision, where we sell online product. But I also think that this was a pretty good move. Specifically, I think that this is a good move right now, because manufacturing in this sector and in this industry is just completely overrun. We don't have enough product of essentially any card game out there. All manufacturers are working under the normal par that they can usually actually produce at. So I think it's a great thing to do. I do think that it doesn't actually impact how much product is generally going to be attainable by players. And I think that there are a lot of reasons for that. Specifically with regards to first edition product, your first edition product, it's not typically going to be going to the people that are trying to play your game. You're going to have all the secondary retailers going to the stores, buying the product, and it's going to get snapped up as fast as possible. And we've already seen that with the pre-orders, right?
Yes, yeah, we have.
Yeah, the stores that open up online pre-orders get completely blasted, and they're none available in like 30 seconds when they get online. So I think that what needs to happen here is that you should probably institute a policy that a product can't be sold online within like X amount of retail days after the store date. If you actually want players to get this product. Now, whether or not that should be a first edition thing and unlimited thing, I don't know. I don't really want to speculate about it. But I know that personally, if I want to go get product, I'm just going to go to a store and buy that product and then resell it. Like, it's not, you know, it's not that different from me going to the distributor. It just takes a little bit longer for me to do it.
I will say this, and this is because I know Todd personally and talk to him a lot when it comes to running businesses. Like, games like, and I hate to say it, I don't want to put Magic on blast, but I'm going to. Like, there's so many things that Wizards of the Coast does with Magic that it's just like a big screw you to brick and mortar shops. They don't support the shops. The markup percentage for selling Magic is absolutely horrendous. But what I see that what LSS is doing here is that they're telling brick and mortar shops, like, hey, we got you. We're going to make sure people are buying from you, and, like, you know, and supporting you as well, so that, you know, the shops that are going to produce this game and produce tournaments and where people are going to go be playing can be able to turn a profit and support their own business. So I like the idea. That's just, you know.
So let's be clear here about one thing. This rule exists for Magic. It also exists for virtually every card game, except my understanding is a number of the Bandai games. So I don't think that the impact that it really has is long-term viable. I think that the rule itself is a, hey, you know, we're setting this out there, and then hopefully you guys can, you know, figure out a way to actually make this viable for your business. But it's not an enforceable rule generally. It just means that if you own an online business, instead of going to the distributor, you go to the store to get product. Whether or not the store marks it up for you, that's, you know, depending on the relationship between the online resellers and the stores. But it happens in other games, including Magic.
All right. So what about older products that we have right now and their prices? I mean, right now I'm seeing the prices, like we said, either stabilize or go down. And that's a good thing. That's going to get a lot of people in. You know, of course, that's going to be on the ARC and WTR stuff, especially with the new products that are going to be hitting the stores mid-February, I believe. So you're going to see more of a decrease in prices for those two sets. I still say Crew is going to stay stable and stick with this prices for a little bit. But yeah, I think that this next flood of product is going to help prices again. So, you know, hopefully E-Strikes and Command and Conquer and some of the more keystone cards don't go too out of whack and people can afford them.
Yeah, if my memory is correct, February 5th is the expected date for WTR and 12th is the expected date for Crew to be available. Or not for Crew, sorry, for Arcane Rising. Now, I think like most games, we're going to see those dates probably get pushed back a little bit as we get, closer to those dates. I would expect it, like you said, closer to the mid to end of February for those products to really be in stores and be available for players. But prices are going to drop. All of the costs are consolidating at the top. Your equipment for classes, except Guardian for some reason, is very stable and going up. Guardian equipment is just dropping like a rock and you can't sell it at all. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I got a legendary for $70.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why that is.
Well, I mean,
Tectonic Plate, I got it for $70.
Of all the decks, it's Guardian. But
I think Guardian is the deck that you guys really actually want to play. Like, you guys talk so much about like this fatigue strategy where you like hit them at the end super hard. And that's literally what Guardian does. So
Yeah, it is.
Well, I think you guys would like it.
Addison, I hope you prove us wrong because we only have one Guardian player in the shop right now, and it's hard to respect that deck right now.
Dude, it's good. It's way better than you think.
I'm sure it is. So I'm not gonna
playing it in a different style than the one guy who's playing it at the shop, just to get a feel for what it does. Besides just swing big four turns in a row and then
I'm gonna swing big. Oh, nothing four times in a row and then scoop.
Nah, it's more like pitch efficiently. Make sure you order your cards properly. Swing with a hammer for six, and at the end of the game, when you've exhausted all your equipment, hit you for 11 twice in a row.
Well, you need to talk to somebody because apparently he doesn't know what he's doing.
Oh.
That's chapter
fire. That's not how we play things around here.
Anybody on the podcast, okay?
I didn't say names.
I said it. I'll say it again too. If anybody.
Wow.
I'm going to tell him to listen to this episode because he's name dropped.
52 minutes in, Danny.
Oh,
we're talking smack, dude.
There it is again.
I did notice today when we were talking about buying some singles that they had kind of dropped. So
yeah,
it's nice that the feeding frenzy has kind of abated a little bit and we don't have to hopefully sell our souls for anything, even though I'm going to sell this foil Kano I got to buy some E-Strikes. At least I could get two instead of just one. I'm pretty excited about
that. There you go.
Moving on up.
I love the glass half full thing.
Give it 3 to 4 months. I think we're going to see product dry up as soon as people can actually play this game. You know, I know that personally, I haven't even finished my constructed list yet because we're here in America. So our COVID numbers are still super high, right? So for me, I don't go to the store that often. I'll go and play, you know, maybe once a month or something if I feel like it's pretty safe. But yeah, I think that once we actually can host more in-store events, once we have more players in America actually playing, specifically here on the East Coast, because I'm not sure if you guys have sold any product of this set yet, but almost all of my sales, probably like 80% of them, are to West Coast players.
Portland, right?
The Nevada, Washington, California area.
Yeah, that area. The huge community out there.
Yeah. So
We have the most COVID numbers, so we're winning, right?
Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Don't know that.
Well, if your life goes to zero, you lose. So if we have more numbers, we're winning.
Oh, all right, Charlie Sheen.
We're the best. We're I mean, that would be ideal, right? Is if we continue to draw players into the game who are able to get their hands on it. And so when stuff like another release of Wraith comes, it, you know, it sells out, even if that means higher card prices in the interim, we're at least getting more people involved in the game as they can get stuff.
Oh, well, yeah.
What this does is this creates artificial squeezes. And that, unfortunately, is not that great for the community. So whenever you have a whole bunch of players that onboard onto a game at once, it's all about product availability. And if the product availability right now is extremely high, but not a lot of people are buying it, and then in 3 months, the product availability hasn't changed, but you have 10 times the amount of players who want product, it's going to drive your prices, you know, right back to where they were 2 months ago on these sets. Because April 30th, right, is the release date for Monarch. So the expectation for us here in America is that, you know, later this summer, maybe this fall, we're going to be able to do more in-store events. We're going to be able to do more learn to plays, and we're going to onboard a lot more players. So in June and July, right, like manufacturing hasn't ramped back up by then. So we're still not getting regular sets of product. We're still just getting in waves. So we don't know, you know, if product availability increases by then.
Yeah. Well, if
prices go up at all, Mike is going to have to start making his own cards.
Yeah, just print them off. Nobody will even notice.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
You could be drawing them with like old melted down crayons that are like three different colors.
Hey, don't judge me.
Well, you should have got in on GameStop, man.
Oh,
I should have gotten in on GameStop, but you know.
I mean, in terms of cases of Monarch, tell me how well you did on GameStop.
A lot of cases.
A lot of cases.
All right. Not all enough. Right.
I missed the boat. I didn't get involved, so I can't afford any cases of Monarch.
Dude, you got to get in. It's become this movement now, right? Where it's like no longer about what it was about before. Like when this started, right? Let's go back a little bit here. Wall Street Bets was just like a community of people who wanted to get rich, but always lost everything on every bet. So now it's become this like weird social movement, right? So instead of just like investing in stock because we're all trying to get rich, it's like now we have to actually, you know, like care about the poors and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm the poors.
That's me.
I can relate.
So we covered a lot of ground tonight. We talked about the calling. I like that there's big events going on that we could track. You know, this isn't like a lot of other games that are sort of U.S.-centric. The fact that New Zealand is able to more or less operate freely because they have responsible leadership means that they can have big tournaments and we get to see cool stuff. So the game kind of continues without our direct involvement. Though it sounds like some events upcoming will probably be being played on TTS. I don't know if you guys think that's skirmish, a good thing or a bad thing, but Skirmish is moving to TTS.
Is it moving
They said webcam.
I don't think TTS was said.
Yeah,
but it's
webcam.
Online. I'm sorry, webcam with Discord.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know that.
We're hoping TTS.
I don't want somebody looking at me on my webcam. No,
well,
that's not very pretty.
Unfortunately, webcam is industry standard. It's what the Digimon card game and a lot of the other card games right now have actually moved to, so I don't think that
yeah
it makes sense. Because you know it's harder to manipulate.
No.
Just don't have your tax returns next to you when you're playing, that's all.
Yeah.
Just have I want to wait for an event for when Monarch comes out and I'll just leave my unopened cases next to my camera. Oh, sorry. Let me move these out of the way. Oh God, I have all these cases. They just keep falling into the camera view.
You're gonna tilt your opponent. So
exactly.
Open the cases, man.
So that's pretty interesting. But I like the live events that we're still getting snippets of, so we can keep an eye on, you know, what stands as a meta right now. Even though the overseas meta tends to be weird.
We also have that big tournament at the end of February that some of us signed up for, right?
Yeah, that's
I think that's this, bro.
Oh, I signed up for that. I don't remember anything about it.
It's Classic Constructed.
Yeah, it's a skirmish, right?
No.
You're talking about the online event. That is CTS.
Yeah, the online event. That's CTS.
Yeah, that's the CTS.
Yeah, that's a different event.
Oh,
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
Red Riot Games.
Red Riot Games. Yeah, there's a lot of us signed up for that. So y'all can see, probably see us. We're gonna
It's a Canadian company.
Yeah, so you probably.
Oh, are they paying you monopoly money? Canadian money's not real money.
Oof. It's okay. It's hey man.
Although there
is more money than
$2,000 prize pool.
$2,000 Canadian dollars.
Hey, that's more than I got.
Yeah, if you win first place, you get $1,000. You get a full playset of foil and lightning strikes.
Oh.
A full playset of foil, Command and Conquers. And a full playset of foil Art of Wars.
Oh, I might have to play in that.
Oh, now it's interesting. Now it's interesting. Okay.
now you're getting me my attention.
And there's like custom play mats. It looks like, I think it's gonna be a fun event.
Yeah.
It's pretty hardcore though. Like it's 16 pods of 8 people, if I'm not mistaken.
And you pretty much gotta win.
And the top person from each pod moves on to the top 16.
Wow. So we're all gonna be, but. So, I announced that because we're probably going to see us playtesting a lot for that. So if you all want to see our TTS streams, you know, we're going to have a lot of playtesting going on for the next month for that.
Yep.
Yeah, we're going to be shooting a lot of pistols, unfortunately.
Pew pew lasers. Pew pew.
Yep. Pew pew lasers.
And so you can find us on Facebook. We've been posting weekly videos so far. We had Todd do a case break of Crucible at the shop. We had a damn near 10-hour playtest video from 2 weeks ago, the same week the first episode came out. We had a 2-hour one this past week, and those are going to keep going. Like we said, people are going to be playtesting for the next event, so be sure to check us out both those places. The podcast is being linked primarily on the Flesh and Blood fan page. We're also in the DC Metro and Hampton local pages. I didn't want to try to infiltrate too many groups when we were sharing those, so if you're welcoming us to post on your local page, please let us know because we'd love to share that with you. We also have a Discord going. We are trying to get all of our local players, because we have a bunch of people, to start moving our chatter from our Facebook group in there so you guys have some people to talk with. We also have all the crew in there at this point. We have a channel in the Discord for podcast questions. We would like to usually take the last 15 minutes or so of the podcast to answer your guys' questions if you have any for us. So please be sure to join us there and ask us anything you want to ask. Mike will tell you anything you want to know about him.
I will.
But anything. So please be sure to ask more comfortable questions.
That doesn't include questions about Ark Smash My Ass.
Anything.
Oh, God.
Anything.
Thank you very much for bringing
you
that up.
You ask, I will tell you. With a smile.
Cool. Just want to make sure.
With a smile.
I'll probably post my questions anonymously, but still.
Well, I haven't posted anything to Ark Smash My Ass yet. We're saving that for some special videos.
Special.
Special. But thank you guys for listening. We're going to wrap it up here. And we will be back in 2 weeks. We do these every other week. Until then, come see us on Discord or comment on Facebook. And talk to you later.
Later, everybody.
Deuces.
Later, guys.